Well, good morning. I'm very grateful to all of you for your presence. I'm very grateful to my God that I can be with you after these 6 years in Guatemala, and to thank you personally, face to face, for the part that you have played in the work that we have done there in that country. There are many faces I don't know, and I have to admit as well, there's many names that I have forgotten. But I'm so glad to see your faces and your smiling faces, and to get to know you a little bit better in this morning. For those of you who don't know my family, Brother Wise gave you a quick rundown of the names, and I'll just give you an idea of who we are. Here's my wife, Amy. Here is my oldest daughter, Sophia. She's 10 years old. Catherine is 8. Emma is 6 years old. Alexander is 3 years old. And Emma is, this is Joanna. If I can't remember the names of my children, how am I going to remember your names? I don't know. But Joanna, the youngest, she was about half a year old when we took this picture about a year ago, but now she's almost 2 years old. So that is my family. And we have spent the last 6 years of our lives, we've been blessed to spend the last 6 years of our lives in the country of Guatemala. For those who are geographically challenged, Guatemala is a small country, a Spanish-speaking country, to the south of Mexico. It's a small country about the size of Tennessee. Here's Tennessee up here. It's about the same size, but it has a population of about 2.5 times that of Tennessee. The city where we were in Guatemala, the majority of the population lives here on the southwest end of Guatemala, and we lived in the city of Quetzaltenango, here in the toe of this boot. Of Guatemala. We lived here in Quetzaltenango. It's the second largest city in Guatemala, about 3 hours to 4 hours, depending on how fast you drive. We worship there in this area. Oh, I show you this picture. This is in front of our house. We were playing with some of the brethren here in front of our house. And this shows you the geography here in this area. It's very mountainous. We lived among the volcanoes and among the mountains, very high in elevation. So when you think of where we lived, we didn't live with monkeys or pineapples or any of the tropical fruits that you might think of when you think of Guatemala. But we were with the carrots and potatoes and some very nice corn back here, but we are also among the volcanoes. We had some volcanoes that we could see from our house. Very beautiful country, very beautiful people. This is where we lived in Quetzaltenango, the city right here. And this is the group with which we assembled for 6 years. We took this picture just before we left. They were kind enough to gather outside of the church's building, and we took the picture there. I wish I could take the time to tell you about each one of these people. They're just amazing, amazing people. Each one has his story, especially people like Jeronimo. Jeronimo is a man. He's in his 50s. And for the congregation here, he's an old, old man, because the majority of the Christians here are in their 20s, 20s, early 30s, and we looked at him as our patriarch. There were some other ones. Jeronimo is an interesting fellow. He was the man that began the work there in the Quetzaltenango area. And started off with just he and his family, and he has many, many stories about how that group started off. But now it's grown to be a quite substantial group there in the Shela area. There's another older gentleman here who's also very interesting. Jose is a blind Christian. He's a blind brother, but even though he is blind, he does a lot of preaching, a lot of song leading, a lot of traveling, visiting congregations throughout the country. He's an encouragement to all of us. But this is the group with which I spent 6 years. We spent 6 years of our lives. Miss them dearly. We were singing some of those songs and thinking about, well, how would they sing those in Spanish? how would they, even though many things are very similar in the way that they would hold their worship services, very, obviously several things that were different, and, it was a great experience, a wonderful experience, to know them and to see the work, the gospel, working in other countries. This is a picture of me speaking. I did want to emphasize that I was not the only preacher here in this congregation. In fact, Jeronimo has been supported by a group in Athens, Alabama for several years. And besides him, there are about eight other young men and other individuals like Jose and Marco. Julio does not preach, for instance, there's Andres. Andres, well, I'll show you a picture of him later on. But several of the young men are very involved. There's about eight different men who participate in the public speaking. I would speak maybe one or two times every week, but the majority of the work that I did was outside of the assemblies, speaking and studying with neighbors and friends. This is a Bible study that I had with brethren in a city called Colima Dos. And then here is me in a place called Gracias a Dios. Again, interesting name. It's the city itself is called Thanks to God. And I'd like to know the history of that city. But this is the majority of the work that I did was with studying with people in the neighborhoods, people in other cities. People who are looking to know more about Jesus and what He did for us. Here is an example of a project that we had with the brethren. A good bit of the time that I spent as well, a good bit of the work that I did was training other young men to learn how to not just teach, but to also to study the Bible, to take the book of Numbers here. And to present studies out of that, to show people what God's will is, just straight from the Bible, which was a very strange concept for the brethren. It's interesting here in the States. Perhaps we are used to that type of study. In Guatemala, everything is just a thematic study. Everything's just a thematic study. We'll study about love. We'll study about the church. We'll study about worship. We'll study about these different themes. But really, getting back to the Bible and taking lessons straight from the Bible, that's very a very odd thought among many Guatemalans. And so a lot of my time was spent teaching them how to do that. And so I signed up for the first week, and I think you can easily see the format that we had. Carlos had the second week. Jeronimo and Marco Cesar all signed up. They're excited to learn how to present studies in this format. And so each teacher would sign up, and then I would work with them beforehand, and we would read the chapters and see what lessons we could learn from those chapters. And in the end, they themselves would present. Here is Andres, and he is presenting a lesson from the book of Numbers. And he was very excited about learning about geography in the Bible times. And so he drew the map up there. And he was excited to use that. Andres has become when I first moved there, he was already presenting some lessons. But he's become very instrumental in the work there in Quetzaltenango. I'm very proud of the progress that he has made there. Apart from the work that I did in Quetzaltenango, I also did quite a bit of traveling in various congregations. In Guatemala alone, from the congregations that I know of, the Lord knows who are His. But the congregations that I know of, there's about 35 different congregations, and I've tried to represent there's some off to the right-hand side that didn't have enough space for all of the map. But there's each dot represents a place where Christians are getting together, and places where I've personally met the Christians there. So there's quite a bit of congregations in the country. Most of them are very small. Most of them are very immature. There's no congregations that I know of that have elders among them. And so you have small groups that are struggling to survive, and small groups that may not have men who are very developed as Bible students or Bible teachers. And so we did a lot of traveling. It reminds me of the frontier work that many people did, in we'd say olden times here, visiting different congregations, having a circuit preacher going from one place to the other. And I did especially a lot of that when I was, in my first and second year there in Guatemala. I did a lot of traveling, about one congregation every single week. I'd go and meet different men. But I felt at the end of the year that I was spreading myself too thin, and decided to focus on one or two or three congregations, and to help them and encourage them. And so in this last year, for instance, I spent a lot of time with the church, one of the churches here in San Pedro. They invited me to come and do a series on marriage. So once a week I'd go there to San Pedro. At the end we were studying the book of Acts. Here in Pachac, very close to where we were worshiping, where we were living too, there in Urbina Cantel. There was another church there that invited me to come and do a study on Revelation. And we're excited to be able to do that once a week as there as well. There are two other congregations that I'll mention especially later on. One up here, and it's almost falling off the map, but it's called a place called Huehuetenango. And the city up here, it's called Camojá. And I will mention these two places very soon later on in the lesson. But it's just interesting to get up here to Camojá. It looks like it would be very close, but in reality, it was 2 hours to Huehuetenango, then it was another 2 hours here to Camojá. And you can see that the right here is a very mountainous area. You could take a very quick, you could take a road up here in the mountains, but the roads were not very good. This road was not very good, but it was very, very much better. You can see how curvy it is here in the mountains. But Huehuetenango and Camojá, I spent a lot of time, especially with the brethren in Camojá, and encouraged them in their work, in Huehuetenango, and encouraged them in their work in Camojá. And I'll tell you a little bit more about those two groups to give you an idea of the work. Here are some pictures of me preaching in various areas. I think I was in Mexico here. Going quickly. And this is preaching in Triunfo there on the coast. Very, very hot there on the coast. Temperature-wise, maybe it's like Houston. But there wasn't any air conditioning. The holes in the wall really helped out. You want to sit there close to the wall to get some air coming through with the breeze. But a fine group of people there as well in Triunfo there on the coast. I wanted to tell you a little bit. This is a group of people. We're standing in front of a river that's called the Blue River. It's a little bit green, but it's called Blue. We have Julio, Maria, his wife, and his daughter, Heidi. Her husband, she's only, I think she was 16 years old, 17 years old, and she's already married. But she has a husband as well, that is a Christian. He's not in the picture. They are from the city that I mentioned earlier, Camojá. That's about 4 hours from Shela, where we were living. Jordi, he is here. Mardo as well is from the city of Huehuetenango. And I wanted to tell you just a little bit about the work that they are doing there and the blessing that I had to be a part in all of that. Jordi comes from a family of four boys, four young men. He's the second oldest. He's about 20 years old. Luis is about 22. And then he has two younger brothers who are still in school. Jordi's father died. And so the breadwinner was no more. And so he and his brother Luis, who are 20 years old, 22 years old, they became the breadwinners in their family. And so in order to look for, occupation, they went up there to Weiwei where they had some family, but there was no church, up there in Weiwei. And you might think that a group are young men, 22 years old, 20 years old, what are they going to do when they get up to Weiwei? But really, I have been very, very amazed by the stubbornness in a good way, the zeal that these young men have had, that in spite of the challenges and the obstacles, they went up there, and for a while they didn't do anything spiritually. But then their conscience got to them and they said, we need to do something. And they started a church, there in Weiwei-Tenango, and they invited, the brethren from Shela, which is about 2 hours away, and some hours from, and some brethren from San Pedro, which is about 4 hours away as well, to come and aid in starting this church there in Weiwei-Tenango. So you have two young men who are the men in the congregation. Their mother is there as well. But they are struggling to not only, have a spiritual life for themselves, but then also to go and, evangelize and bring other lost souls, to the group, to the Lord, and thus to the work there in Weiwei as well. So that we would go every week to support the work there in Weiwei. And then Mardo came along, and Mardo is a fine young man with whom I had been studying for about a year and a half. He said, "I want to preach," and so I said, "Well, let's study together." And for every week we would get together and we would study. And I became very convinced in his ability and his determination to do the work of the Lord. And so when he had a life transition, he was no longer going to the university, I asked him if he wanted to go and support the brethren there in Weiwei. He was agreeable to that. And so he went up there. He's not from Weiwei either. Jordi's not from Weiwei. Mardo is not from Weiwei. But both of them are there now working there in the city of Weiwei-Tenango. So now you have Mardo, who's about 27 years old, and he is now the patriarch in the congregation there in Weiwei. It just gives you an idea of what kind of congregations you have here in Guatemala. You have very small congregations, and this congregation is a group of very young men who have decided to devote themselves to God, and they have this huge task of now preaching to a city of 200,000. Can you imagine it being 20 years old and being saying, "Okay, here's the gospel. Go. go to all of Weiwei and teach them." Well, this is the task that they have. And so Mardo was there, but they needed a lot of encouragement. And I every 2 weeks I'd go up there and worship with them, study with them. I would arrive, in the morning, early in the morning. We'd start studying. 6 hours later, we'd take a break. We'd take some coffee breaks in between, but we'd take a break to go and knock doors, and then we'd come back and study some more. And there was just a great zeal, in these young men. Julio and Maria came to my house at some point. They're not from where we lived, but they came to our house looking really for, not for the gospel, but they were looking for help with some how to interact with the U.S. embassy. They have a son, two sons that are actually American citizens, and long story short, they were looking for some help, some ideas about how to work with the U.S. embassy. While we were there, we were able to talk with him a little bit about the gospel, and who never knew what was going to come about with that. It's one of those situations where you give a tract to the eunuch, you talk to the eunuch, and the eunuch goes off. Who knows what's going to happen to him? But after a while, they gave me a call and they wanted to study some more. And so we made the trip out to, it's about 4 hours out to Camoja, where they live, and we studied various weeks. Maria was more stubborn than Julio. Julio was baptized first, and then Maria, and then Haiti. It was funny. Every time we went out, we didn't study very much because we had to baptize so many people. Not so many people, but we went and baptized Julio, and then Maria, and then Haiti, and we did a lot of studying as well. That's a new family, these are your brothers and sisters, they're in Kamoha. But they don't know very much about the Bible and don't, have a lot of ideas about how to worship God. They knew that Jesus was the Christ, the Son of the Living God, and they wanted to be baptized. But now what? Now what do we do? And so they're very new Christians. Well, the closest Christians that they have to them, who would be able to aid them in their spiritual growth, are these young men here. And so they now are agreeable to travel 2 hours every week to go and worship with these younger Christians. And so you can imagine the task that these young men have. Jordi and Julio... No, Julio, Mardo, I'm changing his name. Mardo, are in their hands has been given the great task of going to all of Weiwei and teaching the gospel. They are struggling themselves to work there in Weiwei-Tenango. But now, go to Kamoha and do the same thing there. And so they are dividing their efforts in between two different areas. I tell you their story because I think it's an encouraging story to know that there are brethren who are willing to make these types of commitments, that are willing to sacrifice, even though they are young men, even though they have obstacles and a full plate for themselves, and they're looking to be the breadwinner, Jordi is, for his younger sons so that they can go to school, but at the same time, he's working to spread the gospel in this city. That's just really encouraging to know that there are brethren in this world who do this type of thing. But then to know that they are not just in their own city, but to see that they're doing it in other areas, that's encouraging for me to know that. But then it also tells us a little bit about generally how the work in Guatemala is. It's a lot of small congregations struggling to survive, struggling to do the Lord's will. But it's a group of people that are just really amazing, have a lot of fire for the Lord's work. And it was a blessing to be a part of that work for those 6 years. Before I left, the brethren there in Urbina, Cantel, Quetzaltenango, wanted me to tell you saludos de los hermanos en Guatemala. Greetings from the brethren in Guatemala. Many greetings to you. These are your brothers. These are your sisters. I wish that you could know them. I wish that you could talk with them and know their struggles. It would be highly beneficial to each one of us to know that in other cultures, in other languages, the gospel is powerful and it is great and it has touched the lives of so many. We serve a great God and they serve that same God. Glory be to Him. So we were there for about 6 years. And we really did not have in mind coming back so soon. We started out going to Guatemala. We're going to be there for 2 years. And then after 2 years, 2 years became 6 years. And 6 years might have become 8 years or 9 years. We really weren't in a rush to leave. But for personal reasons, my mother is not doing too well physically. She has diabetes and is struggling with that. She's struggling with her manic depression as well. And we decided it's about time that her son comes back and is at least in the same country. And so we decided sooner or later we want to come back and be in the States to honor father and mother. But also, there became an opportunity in the Philadelphia area that we became very excited about. We wanted to support this new work Scott Smelser and Jeff Smelser. Jeff is the father of my wife, Amy. Scott is the uncle of my wife, Amy. And both of them came to me with a proposal, with an invitation. Scott works, has been working with a group here in Gettysburg. Here's a map of Pennsylvania. He has been working with a group in Gettysburg. Jeff has been working with a group in the city of Exton, which is about 40 minutes on the outskirts of Philadelphia. Both of them have been looking at Philadelphia for a long time and thinking that Philadelphia really needs a lot more focus. Here's Philadelphia with the star, but thinking that Philadelphia needs a lot more emphasis, that there needs to be more workers in this area. Generally, in the north, there are a lot of people, corresponding to that, or relative to that, there are very few Christians being lights in this area. If you think of the city of Houston, which is a huge city, but Philadelphia is larger than Houston. And how many churches do you have in Houston? A great number. But in Philadelphia right now, within the city limits, there's one congregation. In Dallas is the same geographically, it's the same size as the city of Philadelphia, but Philadelphia has more people. In Dallas, you have lots of different congregations. In Philadelphia, you have one. You have one up here on the north side of Philadelphia. Exton, where my father-in-law, Jeff Smelser, is preaching currently, it's about 40 minutes from the city limits. Here in the north side of Philadelphia, there's a church that meets in a community called Mount Airy. And they have been there for many, many years. It's a group, I've not actually been there, but I think it's a group of about 15 to 20 Christians. And so in the whole city of Philadelphia, of millions of people, you have 15 to 20 Christians. And so with that, those facts, Scott and Jeff decided they wanted to plant a work there in Philadelphia, a new work on the southern part of Philadelphia, around the community of Upper Darby. And they did so, they wanted to do that, and they invited me to come and help with this church planting process. Scott is actually moving. He's leaving the work in Gettysburg, and he's going to move to the Philadelphia area. Jeff is going to continue to work with the Exton group there, 40 minutes from Philadelphia, but he is going to come and make the drive every week to encourage us in the work there in Philadelphia. But the opportunities are extremely wonderful, extremely great. Here on the southern end, for instance, it is a far distance from Mount Airy, but there's a neighborhood in this area that is close to what caught the attention of Scott. It's an area with lots of different immigrants from various places around the world, from Asia, from Africa. And that really appealed to Scott to get into that particular neighborhood. It also offers us a good reach into the central area of Philadelphia and to some of the urban communities. Upper Darby is a community that was especially chosen because of the metro system and a hub that is there in the Upper Darby area. This is a map of the 69th Street Transportation Center, which is located there in Upper Darby. And if I know you can't see the names here, but you can see the lines. Here is that transportation center. And that transportation center connects to the north, connects to the south, connects to the east. And if you're familiar with how the metro works, that's a great advantage to being in this area. It provides a hub, it provides a nice central location for assemblies of the saints. Anywhere you are in the city, if you can grab a bus or train, you can be here within an hour at least. or at the most, here in Upper Darby, so you can assemble. And also, we're excited to use the metro system itself as a means of evangelism. You can put a table there in the 69th Center or Transportation Center, and thousands of people walk by that table. And so we're going to use that to our advantage, handing out tracts, handing out literature, and looking for people who want to study the Bible. Apart from that area, from our experience in Guatemala and learning Spanish, it's been a blessing. My wife did not know Spanish before we went down there, and now she does. We wanted to eat, and so we had to learn Spanish. But now also my kids know Spanish and speak well, and we want to take advantage of that still. And there is a large community in northern Philadelphia of Hispanics. There's about 200,000 Hispanics in this area. And from what I can tell, I think there's one congregation that is working in this area that I know of. They have some different ideas about how to use the contribution. Apart from them, there's no one that I know of working in with the Hispanics there in the Philadelphia area, and this really strikes interest in ourselves. So we're looking at this area right here, but then also there are a lot of Hispanics in the Philadelphia region, and that's part of the reason why Scott and Jeff were especially interested in inviting me to join the work here in Philadelphia. So all in all, we are going to be working in this area. I don't know how long. For how long I will be there, or for how long Scott will be there. We are looking to start a church and to stick it out until something works. It looks to me that there are already some interest in having a church in this area. There are some Christians that, for instance, there are plenty of universities in the area. There are some Christians going to these universities and are interested in having a work in this area. There's also some Christians that I don't know personally, but Jeff said that there are some Christians living in this area their conscience is they're looking for some way to get back to the Bible in a real way, and so they are looking for as well forward to having a group in this area. All in all, there's a lot of doubts that we have. There's a lot of questions that we have exactly how it's going to come out. But the confidence that we have is that the power of the gospel is not limited to Houston, Texas, or the Bible Belt, or to Guatemala, but the power of the gospel is powerful in any area. And that's one thing that I wanted to share with you this morning. Some thoughts about the power of the gospel. I'm sure that you know this verse here in Matthew chapter 28, where it says, "Go therefore make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I commanded you. And lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age." When my wife and I were considering going down to Guatemala, and we were leaving behind a very secure life here in the United States, we felt it was secure, and going down to a place where we weren't sure what was going to happen. We weren't sure what kind of hospitals there were, how are we going to get food, or what. Do they have electricity in these areas? I don't know. That was my answer to all my wife's questions. I don't know. They live down there. We can do it. And I really think of a lot of my wife for being crazy enough to follow me down there. And I have to say that honestly, when we were down crossing the border into Guatemala, and not really speaking very much Spanish. I had had some training in Spanish, but I was difficult to communicate. And then my wife, she did a lot of smiling in that first year, not a lot of talking. But all in all, it was terrifying. We didn't know what was going to happen. There were so many doubts in our minds and questions in our minds. What's going to happen? We didn't know. And now it's funny, now that we've been there in Guatemala for 6 years, and we were very comfortable there in Guatemala after 6 years, and we liked it there. And now to think about going up to Philadelphia, I'm not a Philadelphia. I'm not from the Northeast. I'm a Texas boy. And now to go from Guatemala up to Philadelphia, I have to say, honestly, I am terrified. There's lots of questions that we have, a lot of doubts that we have. How are we going to exactly take this gospel to all these different people? How exactly are we going to do it? What means are we going how are we going to accomplish that? We don't know what kind of hospitals there are. I'm sure we can find something up there. But there's a lot of doubts that we have. A lot of fears that we have, just being honest. And I think of Jordi and Mardo, there and still in Guatemala. The doubts and the fears that they have. And I think of all of you as well, as you try to share the gospel with your neighbors. We always have some type of fear and some type of doubt about obeying God and obeying this verse. But can you imagine the fear that the people who receive this verse, who receive this speech for the first time, the doubts that they had and the fears that they had? We're talking about the 11 disciples who in Matthew chapter 28 heard these words for the first time. And Jesus was not content with saying, "Go ye into all of Jerusalem to preach the gospel." He said to these not trained preachers or evangelists or professional speakers, he says to these fishermen, says to these tax collectors, "Go into all the world to preach the gospel to every nation." Can you imagine being Andrew or being Peter? How am I going to do that? I don't know how to get to Rome. How am I going to do this? And can you imagine the doubts that they would have and the fears that they would have when they are given this great task in their hands? But Jesus says, "Go." And what an amazing task that they are given. But then what an amazing promise that they are given. Go into all the world to preach the gospel to every creature, he says. But then he says at the end of the verse, "I am with you always." Even though it is a huge task for them, Jesus says, "I'm with you. I'm going to be there by your side. And do not fear those who are around you." In fact, I love the passage in Acts chapter 18 when Jesus speaks to Paul. Paul comes to the city of Corinth, and what he says in his letter is that he comes to the city of Corinth with fear and with trembling. It is a huge metropolitan area, maybe like, kind of like Philadelphia in his mind. Maybe kind of like Houston. He's all alone. "What are they going to do to me in this city? They beat me in Philippi. And now that I'm here, what are they going to do to me here?" Jesus comes to him in a vision in Acts chapter 18. And in verse 9, he says, "Do not be afraid any longer, but go on speaking and do not be silent. For I am with you. And no man will attack you in order to harm you. For I have many people in this city." And he settled there for a year and 6 months, teaching the word of God among them. Jesus comes to him and promises him. Much time has passed from Matthew chapter 28. But the promise from Matthew chapter 28 is not just for a short time. It's to the end of the age. And he says in Acts chapter 18, "Paul, don't be afraid. You do your work. You go and preach. Do not be afraid. No one's going to harm you. I am with you. And I have many people in this city. And I love that phrase as well. I have many people in this city. I think there he's not talking about Christians who are already Christians. People who are already Christians. I think he's talking about people who are hearts that are ready for the gospel. Jesus can see the hearts of individuals, and he can see this city of Corinth. There are many people. I have many people in this city. I would say that Jesus has many people in Guatemala too. There are many people. God has many people in Philadelphia. God has many people here in Houston still that need to listen to the simple message of the gospel. Jesus says, go. I am with you. Do not be afraid. Go. It's wonderful to think that as Paul went, he went with Jesus. And he went with the promise that Jesus was with him. It is a lesson to us about the power of Jesus. It is a lesson to us about the power of the gospel. It is amazing that Paul, when he arrived there in Corinth, that he did not... He could have preached a whole host of things when he arrived. He could have talked about philosophy. He could have talked about sports. He could have talked about the religions there and all sorts of things he could have presented. But in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, when he is there in Corinth, he says in chapter 1 and verse 22, "For indeed Jews ask for signs and Greeks search for wisdom, but we preach Christ crucified. To Jews a stumbling block, and to Gentiles foolishness. But to those who are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ is the power of God and the wisdom of God. Because the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men." He speaks about the powerful message that we have in our hands, that Christ, and the message about Him, that is the power of God, as it says in Romans chapter 1. It is the power. And I can present other things, Paul says. But I present the very thing that's most difficult for these people to hear. Christ crucified. Because I have the confidence that Jesus is what they need. And Christ is what they need. He was particularly convinced of the power of the gospel. And we need to be convinced today, if we are going to be effective in the kingdom, we need to be convinced as well that Jesus is with us and that the gospel has power as well. It's not so much, the work of being an effective evangelist is not so much about what tricks he has up his sleeve. But it's about the conviction that he has in his heart that Jesus died on a cross for me and for you. And that he demands now our all. And that message has so much power, and we need to be convinced of that. It had power in the New Testament. It is amazing to me to think about the book of Acts and how surely it was a surprising, or the results of preaching the gospel were surprising even to the first Christians. That here are these 11 men, here is the gospel, go. And in the first day, 3,000? And that these 11 men, who are all Jews, all of a sudden in Acts chapter 8, we're talking to some Samaritans? Who would have thought that the Samaritans would listen to the gospel? But even more strange, in Acts chapter 10, now we're talking to Gentiles? And if you are a good Bible student, you know the relationship between the Gentiles and the Jews, and you know that was not expected. Peter got in trouble for doing all of that in Acts chapter 11. And even Peter, when he arrives at Cornelius' house there, he talks to Cornelius and says, "Well, you tell me, why am I here? Why?" But by the end, he gets it, that God is no respecter of persons. And that the gospel has power in whatever culture Whatever tongue. And what a beautiful message for talking about the power of the gospel. When we talk about Acts chapter 16, when Paul arrives in Philippi, and he talks to some ladies there at the edge of a river, and they're all Jewesses, and Lydia is baptized, and we might not be surprised that she is baptized. Well, after all, she is searching for God, she prays to God, and so we're not very surprised that she wants to become a Christian now that she understands that Jesus is the Christ. But then later on in the chapter, Paul is beaten. And by that same man that beat him, then comes along and says, "What do I need to do to be saved?" And then he as well listens to the message, that same message about Jesus, and is convicted in his heart, and he becomes a Christian. Can you see the contrast between these two individuals? You have a woman, you have a man. You have a Jew who believes in God already. You have a pagan who believes in many gods. You have a woman that is wealthy, perhaps. You have a soldier who has been hardened by his work. But both of these people listened to the same message about Jesus. And both of these people came to the cross. It's amazing to me to think that on the next Sunday then, that Lydia and the jailer sat on the same pew, singing songs of praise to the same God. What other thing in this world can bring two people who are so different together? Even looking at the people who are here today, we have people who are so different. We have engineers. We have people who flip burgers, I'm sure. We have people who are more wealthy, more well off. We have people who are poorer. We have people of one race. We have people from other races. What is it that could bring us together under one roof? It is the gospel. It is the gospel that had power in Philippi. It is gospel that I have had the blessing to see being worked there in Guatemala. It is the gospel that I have faith that will have power in Philadelphia as well. It's that same gospel that I'm sure, I'm convinced, that it will have power here in Houston as well. I thank you, brethren, for your time this morning, for listening a little bit about the work that we have done in Guatemala, the hopes that we have to do work in Philadelphia. And I thank you for the support that you have been all of these years and will continue to be in the years to come. In all of this, may our God be glorified in all that we do. Let us be forgotten and God be glorified. And let His gospel be taken to every soul on this globe. That's what we are about, because we are His children. I don't know who is a Christian here and who is not a Christian. There are many new faces this morning. But I want to, in this morning, extend the Lord's invitation. He said to His disciples, "Go and to teach, make disciples of all the nations." And still that same commandment is being carried out even today. And maybe you today have listened to who Jesus is in the Bible classes. Maybe you have been studying your Bibles and have understood that He is the Christ, that He is the Son of God, that you want to give your life to Him in baptism. We want to invite you now in front of all of these witnesses to come and give your life to Him. Come forward as we stand and as we sing.
There's a fountain of praise for you and me, I would say, so grace to free. In the fount of love from the source above, and He bids us all freely drink. Will you come to
the fountain free.